So we're in the season of weddings happening, and Pastor Charisse was away a couple of weekends doing out-of-town weddings, and next weekend is my turn. I'll be away doing an out-of-town wedding. And when we work with a couple, we're not just planning the service, we're helping them plan their lives. So we're preparing for the marriage, not just for the day. And so the framework that I use for that invites a couple to take an inventory, and it's a snapshot of where they are, and we can divide that into areas of strength and areas of wrong. Hey, you don't want to sit and look at the pastor who's going to marry you and have them say, here are the structural deficits in your life. No. Close. Growth. Growth opportunities, yeah, growth opportunities. And the reason is not just to soft pedal or sugarcoat things. The reason is that there are very few structural deficits that we bring to marriage. What we have are things that we just haven't really grown into yet, and certainly that we haven't grown into together. So a couple anticipating marriage, a couple who's been married for a long time, there are always, always, always going to be growth opportunities. And so it's not only in marriage, but across our lives. Growth is always, always, always in front of us. So we're doing a three-week series called Growth Through Change. And it's prompted by the upcoming change to our Sunday morning schedule. Different service times. Sunday school is going to happen at a different time. We're still figuring out what are we going to do in the way of adulthood and other offerings across the morning. So that's really what's prompting it. And both growth and change, if you think about them, are big words, and they're not words that are universally beloved. So change, for example, change is inevitable. It's constant. Henry Cloud says, transition is the only constant in our lives. You don't necessarily know. You don't necessarily know when, where, how, but you can count on it. And the book, or the story that I just read from Ecclesiastes says it in a more poetic way. Change is a constant. It is inevitable. Growth, I should have said, with the kids too, there are changes that we seek. There are changes that are improvements in our lives. There are things that we're going to celebrate, the changes. But there are some changes that we didn't choose. Sometimes the changes are health-related, ours or someone else we love. Sometimes people move away. I mean, there are all kinds of changes that we would not have sought out. And so to call them universally good would be incomplete and unfair. How about growth? Growth sounds like something we would want. Growth's always good. But if you've lived long enough, you've had occasions where growth isn't necessarily good for everyone. You know, we talk about we're going to move from a manufacturing economy to a service economy or a knowledge economy. But when you hear that, it sounds really good, but you're not thinking that. You're probably thinking, oh, I'm a manufacturing worker and I'm going to develop skills in this other area. No, there's not going to be a job for you. So sometimes growth leaves people behind and isn't good for everybody. So about 40 years ago, there was a psychologist. She's still living, and she's now at Stanford University. May have been then, too. Her name's Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. And the educators are familiar with her, but her insights are more broadly applicable than that. And she started looking at how is it that people handle challenge and change in their lives? Why is it that for some they thrive and for others they struggle in the face of challenge and change? And so she started doing research, which has held up now, you know, for 40 years. She came and spoke at the high school a few years ago, very not only eloquent but humble. And a big-hearted person. So she divided the ways of thinking into a fixed mindset and growth mindset. And so we're going to pop that up. Don't try and read it because it's the writing's too small. It's there so I can read it for you and tell you. So how do you know you're thinking in a fixed way? So the idea there is that intelligence, and I would expand it to say other attributes and abilities, that it's static. You get what you get, and you got to deal with it. So if that's the way you see the world, then you're going to want to avoid challenge and change. You're going to want to see that your efforts, because everything that you have is your own ability, so trying harder isn't necessarily going to do you any good. You tend to give up more easily, and you might feel threatened by others' accomplishments. And then the last one is you're going to ignore negative feedback. So that's all those things are associated with a fixed mindset. Now, this isn't like either or, okay? So we can have a fixed mindset, say, at work, and a more growth mindset at home or vice versa, but you get the idea. It's a framework. The growth mindset says that intelligence and our abilities can be developed, that we can grow them. And so we think differently from the growth mindset. We're going to embrace challenge and change. We're going to hang in there in the face of difficulties or setbacks. We're going to see that mastery isn't just what we're born with, but that it comes out of our effort as well, and that we can take and even seek out criticism and seek inspiration in the successes of others. So drop that. Thanks, Rob. I want to go back to that. The reason I brought it up is because I think that the story we just heard from the Gospel of Luke is a great example of the contrast between the fixed and the growth mindsets. So the Pharisees and the scribes, who are so often Jesus' adversaries and opponents, they're in that familiar role now. They're calling him out in what they call, what they would consider a flouting of the rules. And it would be very easy for us to say, these guys just don't get it. They're obstacles to all the growth and change and good new things. But that would be to sell them short. The Pharisees were very, very observant of the law because they were living in a time when God was visibly absent, and the people of God were under foreign rule. So what was it that was going to hold them together during that time? It was going to be a very faithful and complete observance of the law. There was also the understanding, the expectation, that when God did come back, that those who had been faithful to the law would be rewarded for that. So they were looking at rules not just for the sake of rules, but rules for the benefit of, it was a means to an end. The end was that God would come back and would be present. But unfortunately, as often is the case, sometimes we get means and ends confused, and sometimes they would go a little bit too far, and they became an end unto themselves. So they were all about the fixed mindset. You could summarize what they would think and say by these two things. We've always done it that way. And who are you to tell us that we're wrong? Those are good fixed mindset examples. And Jesus comes into this, the scene. And they say, how is it that your disciples, at a time when others would be fasting and abstaining from celebration, they eat and drink like gluttons? And Jesus says, it's because you're not going to want to starve the guests at the time when the bridegroom is present. When the bridegroom is present, it's not a time for fasting, it's a time for feasting. It's not even a time, sensibly, it's not a time for kale and quinoa, it's a time for prime rib and lobster tail. It's not a time for modest portions of indifferent wine, it's a time for the best stuff you got. And Jesus is saying, the rules, the laws that are so important to you guys that were to hold you over until such a time, this is the time. I'm the end for which the means were created. Can't you see it? I'm all about the new. I'm not only bringing the new, I am new. You experience God in a new way, in and through and as me. Can't you see it? Goes on and he tells them three short parables, and they contrast new and old. And our tendency would be to read this or hear this simplistically, like the new is superior to the old. It's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying, and we're going to look at this, what he's really saying is that the new and old have a hard time living side by side. New and old don't get along all that well right away. Fixed mindset and growth mindset have a hard time even hearing and understanding each other. So he tells these three short parables. The first one, he uses cloth, the image of cloth. So he's got new cloth and he's got old cloth. And he said, you're not going to take a perfectly good item of clothing and cut a patch out of it to sew a patch on an old garment. Now, this just doesn't make sense in our context. First of all, because our closets are over full. I took a sack of clothes to Goodwill yesterday. I couldn't tell anything came out of my closet. But in Jesus' time, cloth was very, very expensive. It was unusual for someone to have more than one garment, period. So they're not going to take something perfectly good and new and cut it up to patch something old. But the other thing is, if some of you all do this stuff, so clearly I'm out of my comfort zone here. I think I've sewn twice in my life. But the new patch is not yet shrunk, and the old clothing garment is shrunk, and so when you put it in the wash, the new patch shrinks and tears apart anyway. With me? All right, so new and old don't do so well together. Then he says, he uses the image of wine, and he's talking about new wine and old wine skins. So when was the last time you bought wine in a skin? You know, you go down to the store and say, can I have a skin of this? We buy it in bottles, sometimes in boxes. And for those of you who are embarrassed to admit that you drink boxed wine is on the comeback trail. Some of it's better now, so don't be sneezing at boxed wine. But in Jesus' time, they put the wine in like the stomach of an animal. And that was where the wine would age. But before it could age, it had to ferment. So you'd put grape juice, unfermented grape juice, in the animal's stomach, and then the fermentation process would take place, which would expand the stomach. But because it had some elasticity, it would give, and then everything would settle down, and eventually you'd have something worth drinking there. Jesus is saying, if you take the wineskins that have been used too many times, they've lost their elasticity. You can't put unfermented wine in there and have that experience without it being a mess and costly, because you lose your product and you lose also the container. And he goes one more. He says, oh, by the way, no one who's had old wine is going to be interested in new wine. Is it the oldest? Better, or at least it's good. So some things haven't changed across the millennia. Aged wine, to a point, is going to have better flavor than wine right out of the vineyard. And so I think Jesus is acknowledging that the Pharisees and the scribes like their relationship with God the way it is. And why would they even consider something more? But of course, he's saying, if you're not open to at least experiencing the new, what are you going to miss out on? So, Jesus says one more thing here, and they don't really respond to it. He said, there's going to come a time when the bridegroom is not with them. And that's the time for them to fast. That's the time for them to abstain. He's anticipating his death. That Jesus will die, and that is definitely not the time to be celebrating. That's a time to be mourning and fasting. But it doesn't last very long. Jesus is dead for days, and then he's bodily raised, and he remains alive today. So we are always, always, always in the season of the bridegroom. No matter what else is going on in our lives, the bridegroom is with us. We are always, always, always in the season of resurrection, new life, celebration. So it would make perfect sense then if, as people of God living in the resurrection who are always with the bridegroom, that we would be the most eagerly embracing of change and growth. Right? Isn't that how it works? How many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb? There are many, yeah, there are many variations. Y'all can share them later, right? So why is it that change is not universally embraced by us? What is it that stands in the way? I think it's, I'm going to share two things. It might be more than these. One is that, you know, we're not living off-grid. We're not living with our heads in the sand, dwelling in caves. I mean, we've got growth and change all around us all the time. And sometimes the pace is exhausting. And I think that when it comes to our life in Christian community, life in church, we're seeking more familiarity, more comfort, more what we know. Not necessarily because it's better, but just because we're exhausted. That's one thought. And when it comes to, that's for all of us, by the way. But when it comes to leadership, it actually becomes more difficult to implement change the longer someone is in a leadership role at a certain place. And it's counterintuitive because, on the other hand, we've got relational capital, which if we've served for the most part well, we build up relational capital and trust grows. But the other side of that is, the other side of that is that it's hard to implement change that we know how it's going to hurt and we know who it's going to hurt. So if you don't know anybody, you just come in and do a quick little inventory. You bring in the consultants, right? They say, oh, you want to improve these processes, you want to change these processes. Easier for a new pastor to do that. After we've done life together, the amount of time that we have, it's hard. It becomes personal. I don't want to hurt so-and-so, and I know it will. So between those two things, those two factors, I think it explains why it takes us a little longer sometimes to bring about change than we ought. So the changes to our Sunday schedule are in response to broader changes beyond this place and probably should have happened 3 to 5 years ago. So what are those broader changes? Let me talk about that a little bit. Culturally, there is diminishing support, if not outright antipathy, for faith communities, for any kind of what they call organized religion. And some of that distrust and antipathy has been earned by bad behavior, public bad behavior, but not all of it. So we've got that. There was once an expectation that everyone was involved in some kind of faith community. I grew up in a town like that. Maybe some of you did too. The only questions were, you know, do you worship on Friday night, Saturday morning or night, Sunday morning, Sunday night? It was just where and how and when, not whether. That's long gone. It's long gone. And we live in an affluent and educated community which tends to create opportunities, options. You all have terrific things to do on Sunday mornings besides be here. And it's not just that there are other options, but there are other things that now are, that we look to deliver meaning in our lives. Oh, I wouldn't want you to be in too many meaningless activities, but I'm talking about ultimate meaning. You know, the things that really define us. Yeah. So we've got all that going on. And then, you know, we tend to want to go quickly to kids' activities, in particular to kids' sports. And there's something to that, but it's not only that. It's not only that. I will talk about kids' sports a little bit because that has had bearing on the service times that we've chosen. So, the only time I ever put on a baseball uniform, the only time I ever put on any sports uniform on a Sunday was opening day for Little League, which was always on Mother's Day. And there was not a pitch thrown. There was no game because it's Sunday. We're not playing baseball on Sunday. But we would put on our uniforms and go to the stadium, the park, and we'd all line up looking neat, cleanest those uniforms were going to be all year. And someone would play the national anthem. We'd sing it. And then we'd go home. And because this was before the days of mom gets taken out to brunch on Mother's Day, mom got to go home and cook dinner on her day for her family. So we never had games, period, on Sundays. So, you know, by the time I came here, there were games on Sundays. All of our kids played youth sports. But the leagues here didn't schedule games until afternoon on Sundays. And over the time that I've been here, that time has moved up and up and up. And so it used to be, families would say, Pastor, we have to be out of here by noon. So that was why we had a 10:50 service instead of a 11 o'clock service. That and kickoff for the Bears game. And then they started saying, Pastor, we need to be out of here by 11. And so we made sure that Sunday school was, you know, earlier. But now what they're saying is, Pastor, we need to be out of here by 10. We've got games that start as early as 10 o'clock. And, you know, we can stand here and say, look, if you want to be here, this is when we're meeting. Or we can say, we want to meet you where you are so that you can be here and have your kids involved in these other things that are important to you. So that's what we're going for. That's why Sunday school is moving to 8:45. And we're going to need to be very clear and intentional and persistent in communicating to our young families, look, you told us. So here it is. Come and engage. We're here for you. So what is it that we're asking of all of us now? A couple things. First of all, that we commit to hanging in there. Probably didn't get everything perfect the first time. Then we commit to hanging in there and working through things. What does that look like? What it means is that when we hear ourselves saying things of the fixed mindset, either to ourselves or to other people, to challenge ourselves to respond with a growth statement. So what might that look like? It might look something like this. If you say to yourself, I liked the old schedule better, what do you think? Is that fixed or growth? Fixed. Planted, fixed, right? I like the old schedule better. So your growth mindset self would say to your fixed mindset self, self, I have no doubt that you like the old schedule. But you haven't experienced the new one yet to even know the relative benefits and the losses there. Can you be open to at least considering what might the new one offer? Fixed mindset might say, this will never work for us. And the growth mindset might say, I'm open to seeing what this might open up for us. Now, you might also get to the point where, you know, you've tried it and we've lived into it for a few months. And you say, you know, I really did like the old one better. And this isn't really working for me very well. Well, then the growth mindset would say, what are you learning about how you handle disappointment? Can you handle disappointment in a different and new way that opens up something in yourself and creates some space for other people? So that's for all of us. The part that I would reserve for leaders is this. The fixed mindset would say, we thought of everything. This is the perfect plan. And of course, the growth mindset would say, we need to be open to what people are saying and see if there aren't some things that we missed and can modify. So I put that out there. Those are the asks. It's not for today, but for going forward. And I want to end, though, with a broader reflection on change. Because even for the church nerds like us, this is not the only change in front of us right now. You got other stuff in your lives. So I was thinking about growth mindset, and faces come to mind when I think like this. Who do I know who just embodies the growth mindset? And one of the faces, the first one that came up, was our former pastor, Pastor Will Wagner. Now, Pastor Will was here for, he's been gone for maybe 8 years, still living. I'm not speaking in euphemisms. But he's been departed from here on staff for about 8 years, on staff for 10 or 11 years, after he retired as a chaplain from Lutheran General Hospital. So he's either 86 already, he's going to turn 86 this year. He is, I can't figure out whether he's the youngest old person I know or the oldest young person I know, but he's got this curiosity about life, and he's always seeking and learning and growing and incorporating. So I called him the other day, and I told him what we were doing this morning, and I said, Willard, I think about you when I hear that. What's up these days? What are you learning? How are you growing? What are you doing? And he said, I'm learning that we have very little control, period. And we talked about that a little bit, and he was sounding kind of pensive. So he said, well, let me tell you where I am. So he's out west because his and Grace's adult son married later in life, and the woman that he married had been diagnosed a few years ago with ALS. And as you know, that's progressive, and it never ends well. And they're nearing the end with her and for her. So this might be their last visit. And then he talked a little bit more about that, and he said, everything that we experience in our lives prepares us for what's yet in front of us. Fixed mindset or growth mindset? Everything, even the hardest things, prepares us for what's yet in front of us. And then he said, we take great comfort in the presence of Jesus, and we take great comfort in knowing that his resurrection is also promised to my daughter-in-law. So here they are, anticipating a funeral and still celebrating the presence of the bridegroom. To everything, there's a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Amen.